From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deckant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Strange news for strange days indeed. We're going to explore some irony in the world of NFTs. We're going to explore some... regulation, the consequences thereof, and the necessity thereof. And before we get into any of that, we found now that there's always a list of heists every time we do this strange news segment. I don't know if we want to save those for the end or if we want to just run through them now. What do you guys think?
Oh, man. You know, I love a good ridiculous heist. I'd say dealer's choice, frankly.
I think at the end would be great.
Okay. There you go.
But you know, one thing we haven't done, have we spoken aloud about how much fun we had at the This Is Important live show?
Oh, we haven't mentioned
Not publicly. We should make a statement about our fun levels.
Yes, let's put it out and let's get, you know, I actually am applying to be a notary later so we can stamp stuff. Yeah,
dude,
just like
pilot
validation.
Notary?
Well,
this guy.
One is a little bit easier than the other. Actually, we could.
Do you get your own personalized like stamp? One of those big, thick, chunky boys?
I think you do.
That's awesome.
We could, the three of us could make a day of it if you guys want to go become notaries. I think it's a very unnecessary power, but you know, who doesn't love stamps?
It's a cool micro superpower, I would argue.
There you go.
Well, despite none of us currently being notaries, Matt, you raise an excellent point. We did indeed get to meet some of our, I think it's fair to call the guys comedy heroes. Would we agree with that?
Well, definitely guys that we look up to because they're about our same age. They've been incredibly successful and created some of the most iconic characters that were on TV for years. So, yeah, I mean, the Workaholics guys, you now have a show called This Is Important. If you don't know about it, you should be listening to it. If you're okay with... let's call it blue humor, maybe. but it was just a tremendously fun show. And those guys as individuals were extremely kind and not what you expect when you get warned all the time about meeting somebody you look up to. And
don't do it.
Yeah, that was not the case with those guys.
It was so cool, too. Like the venue they performed at was this really posh, cool theater where they often do like ballets and like, you know, like classical music performances, the Cobb Energy Center. I'd only been there one time prior to see the Icelandic art rock band Seeger Rose. It just felt like such an interesting swath of creativity from Seeger Rose to the Workaholics guys, you know, talking about tight buttholes. It was fantastic.
And Workaholics was a fantastic show. Before that, they did something called Mail Order Comedy on YouTube, where you can see some of the early pure sketch work that they did. We're talking about our pals Adam, Kyle, Blake, and Anders. These guys were, as you said, Matt, absolutely electric in their live show. We got to meet them briefly after the show. It was just a fantastic time. You know what? Shout out as well to our pal, super producer Anna Hosnier, who was the entire reason we got to hang out.
The proverbial hookup, no question about it. Yeah, no, I got fat. As the Beatles would say, a fantastic time was guaranteed for all. I think that's how they said it.
Yeah.
A splendid time, perhaps? Speaking of which, guys, leading with a little fun news story that just really quickly. Have you guys seen this terrible new AI-driven Beatles video for this, like, song?
I don't love it.
It's so bad. It's like, this is what AI should never be used for. They They used AI on the audio of John Lennon's vocal that he recorded on a cassette just to make it sound nicer. And then they, you know, the living Beatles overdubbed their parts and stuff. But the video is just the most quintessentially bad, like, green screen. It's like, you know, modern day Paul McCartney, modern day Ringo Starr, superimposed with, like, Sgt. Pepper era George Harrison. Like, he's right there. But it looks so flat and weird, and it's just, it's really bad. Shame on you, Peter Jackson. Shame on you.
I know. Pete, you can't win them all. But also, I think it's a fantastic arrow in the quiver of SAG-AFTRA's argument about AI characterization.
Ooh, I wonder if that was intentional on Mr. Jackson's part. Our dear friend of the show, Jordan Runtog, has a theory. Then because, you know, obviously the Get Back documentary was such a smash and really brought the Beatles back into the top of people's minds, you know, in the modern era, a lot of people discovering them for the first time. And his theory is that Peter Jackson is so integral to, like, the next phase of Beatles, like, you know, marketing and selling and figuring out how to, like, restore old stuff with his, like, proprietary AI technology, that they just let him run with whatever piece of shit he turned in because they didn't want to cross him.
I love a conspiracy.
I think it's an interesting, I mean, it's very on brand with the show. So, sorry, I didn't mean to derail. I think that's just a neat story that was bugging me, and I think probably bugging a lot of people. It's basically become an instant meme because it's so laughably absurd looking.
We do live in the era of miracles and wonders and instant memes, and sometimes it's difficult not to weep. Shout out to Paul Simon,
who will
appear as an AI avatar sometime in the future.
Please God no. That song is so good. Is that
it's beautiful.
The boy with the boy in the bubble?
Yes.
The boy in the bubble. Some of my most heart-wrenching songs are by Simon and Garfunkel and Paul Simon. Like the song "The Only Living Boy in New York." Every time that song comes on, I weep openly. I'm not going to lie. I weep openly.
Losing love is like a window in your heart. You know, everyone can see the wind blow. This may be this feeling of great loss may be something people are encountering if you are, like many of us out there, a fan of chicken nuggets, a super convenient food, admittedly not super great for you. And it turns out that chicken nuggets are in a bit of a crossroads at the moment. Quite recently, the gargantuan food producer Tyson Foods, which specializes in poultry, announced that it is, quote, voluntarily, unquote, recalling around 30,000 pounds of chicken nuggets. That would be 13,608 kilograms for everybody outside of the United States. And they're doing this massive recall because pieces of pliable metal were found in these products. These are specifically, get this, the fun nuggets, which is the official word for, or official term for, the dino-shaped ones.
Yeah, the vaguely triceratopsian, stegosaurusian nuggets.
AKA the one Matt fed his son for years.
Oh, dude, I love them. You know what? You nailed it. They did it right with the branding. They're fun. You can play little games with them. Be like, I eat you, dinosaur. I'm bigger than you.
I know, right? It's almost like a embedded lesson about empowerment. You know, now I eat the T-Rex. So the issue here is, of course, chicken nuggets occupy their own space in the pantheon of internet memes and nomenclature. So this gets a lot of attention, but we wanted to give it some attention specifically to explore some aspects of this story that apply to larger issues. So Tyson released a statement, and you can read it free online at their website. They said they're voluntarily recalling approximately 30,000 pounds of, quote, frozen, fully cooked chicken fun nuggets sold in 29-ounce packages. They take pains to say no other Tyson brand products are affected. And again, this is the official source. They're saying a limited number of consumers have reported they found small, pliable metal pieces in the product, and Tyson says, out of an abundance of caution, we are recalling this product. As far as we can tell right now, according to the U.S. Food Safety and Inspection Service, or FSIS, there was one report of a minor oral injury. So one person essentially cut the inside of their cheek or their tongue when eating these. And I wanted to bring this up because this reminded me of an excellent conversation we had not too long ago about automobile manufacturer recalls.
And the formula that they talk about in Fight Club, right? Mm-hmm. Like if X plus Y plus blah, blah, blah divided by so-and-so equals is less than the cost of a recall, then they don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something else that just happened in the news and I'm trying to recall it right now. Decals. Yeah, exactly. It's decals that go on the front of steering wheels that it's apparently a popular thing that I was unaware of.
Those like emblem things or like the badge type deals?
Yeah, maybe that's exactly what it is. But you put it literally on your steering wheel, like where the horn might be or in that area where the airbag deploys.
Something additional? I mean, like my car has the car logo in the center of the steering wheel.
It's a third party aftermarket thing that goes on top of like where the logo would be. And there was one case, it was tangentially related to another recall, but it becomes a projectile, like especially ones that have rhinestones on them. That's a very popular thing.
I see.
The rhinestones just situation. Like you get some birdshot, basically.
Yeah, it's like a shotgun blast to the face.
I didn't think rhinestones could be worse than they already are. Wow. Okay, because this is new to me, Matt. I was immediately thinking maybe it's the aftermarket, you know, the grips that go around wheels that have all kinds of nasty chemicals in them.
Or the fuzzy ones. You ever seen the fuzzy ones? Like troll doll hair?
Well, be safe, folks, and maybe take off the vanity stickers. You know, the scary thing about the world and humanity is there's probably someone who has a little vanity badge right there in the center of the steering wheel, but it's a mirror, so they can like watch themselves American Psycho style while they drive.
That seems extra dangerous and vain, and maybe sort of like, you know, maybe you got it coming. I'm joking. No one deserves that. But boy, that would explode because you know if the airbag deployed. Mm-hmm. It would just be like a Final Destination scenario, you know, even with a little small mirror, potentially.
Yeah, well, even like you were saying, with with any kind of textured badging there, right? Because you can look at a steering wheel and usually you can see the creases or perforations where the bag will deploy.
There's relief in them, 100%.
Yeah, relief's a good way to put it. So recalls are important. They are a part of business for automobile manufacturers. They are also, it turns out, a part of business for large monopolistic food manufacturers. And this is not the first brush Tyson Foods has had with recalls or recalls. There's a great article we want to shout out from BBC News by Annabelle Leong. And in this, the journalist points out that as recently as 2019, Tyson Foods had another recall of chicken nuggets. This time, it was not small, pliable metal pieces, just random pieces of blue rubber.
It sounds like a case where in the giant manufacturing process to make these, something fell in. Right? And got ground up nice and good.
Yes, with the rest of the chicken pieces.
Yeah. And all the grasshoppers. Ants. That are no doubt in there as well after Tyson's recent acquisition of that insect protein company. I'm joking.
Sir, they're soldier flies, sir.
I'm so sorry.
Respect their service, the soldier flies.
Yeah. The internet, pay me no mind. This is not what's happening. This is definitely, I'm serious.
So we already know that there is an ongoing controversy with these formed chicken proteins. Right. You find them in Tyson. You find them anywhere in the United States, often at fast food locations. Of course, McDonald's has to take the hit. McDonald's, famously a real estate company that happens to sell snacks. they also get in trouble on a, I would say, every 2 year basis, biannual basis for for certain controversies about what they're actually putting in their nuggies, as the internet calls them. Interesting to note also, you guys, the same year, 2019, Tyson recalled millions of pounds of chicken strips because of concerns, again, a proactive voluntary recall, concerns that they might also be contaminated with metal. And Matt, to your point, I believe you are correct. I believe that it's a problem of scale, right? Mm-hmm. And a problem of subcontracting out to things. There is a growing controversy, which will probably be even more mainstreamed in coming months or years, regarding the use of child labor in some of these agricultural concerns. And I know, I think it was just last year, Tyson shut down several chicken processing plants in the United States because during the pandemic, demand for chicken started to go down until an inflection point. God, I hate you that term, but it's true. It's apt here. An inflection point occurred. Beef and pork in general became more and more expensive. We all remember that part, right? Do you guys?
Oh, sure.
Did you get sticker shock at some point?
This has definitely been a bellwether by which a lot of folks are measuring inflation and just in general, like how much more expensive it is to like live is grocery bills.
There's a, oh gosh, I want to say a 3-star restaurant in Belfast that is shutting down because it's too expensive to carry on creating food at the level that they want to create food. So they said it's just impossible to get enough people who are able to pay for the food into their restaurant now. Even in a, you know, major city like Belfast, they just can't do it. So they're going to completely redo this 3 Michelin star restaurant into something that's affordable for people to eat.
Wow. I mean, and that's something people who are in the restaurant industry, many of our fellow conspiracy realists, can witness anywhere in their own neck of the global woods. You know, restaurants have always been a cutthroat business with razor-thin margins. And if anything shifts in the wrong direction, then your business all of a sudden is non-viable unless you become a non-profit. You know what I mean? So what we're looking at here is a problem of monopolistic control over things. It's simply like, yes, it's all grand and Pollyanna and fiddle-dee-dee to say, oh, I am at a point in life where I only get organic food. I only get farm-to-table stuff. I know the name of every animal I eat, but that's simply not realistic for the vast majority of people, which means that these businesses, these large interests, are going to continue. At this point, before we go to our ad break, we've got to say it's a bit of a dilemma. Tyson does feed people. The livestock industry, especially the poultry industry as it exists today, is a horror show by most measures, by almost any ethical measure. I would like to end by saying we are going to follow up on this. Good luck to the people at Tyson who are reporting to their shareholders, are reporting their latest quarterly earnings on November 13th. And shout out to the latest Rick and Morty episode as we record. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it is exactly about stuff like this. And it starts with a story about spaghetti. So we're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be back with more strange news.
And we're back. And you know what else is back, fellas?
What's that?
McRib.
Oh, I hope so. What season? Sorry, what's McRib season?
It's like a Cthulhu.
Literally, what time of the year is it?
I don't know.
The theory is it depends on global pork prices.
Hey. I don't know, but okay, maybe.
Awesome. I don't think that's actually true overall.
It's a fun thing to think about. The pumpkin spice latte is back for sure, which is, goes by PSL. Sometimes people will say PSL for pumpkin spice latte. And I know it's pronounced latte. I'm just being a fancy boy. But another acronym that hasn't been in the news as much lately, NFTs, baby. Remember those?
Mm-hmm. Remember those
million-dollar gifts or whatever? There were gifts. There were JPEGs. There were, you know, ones that move. There were little video loops. It was non-fungible tokens.
I thought it was non-fungi tapenade.
Yeah, okay. It's a tapenade that does not contain mushrooms, which is no tapenade of mine, let me tell you, or none that I'm interested in. In any case, but yeah, NFT. I think the most popular, or at least the biggest, like celebrity groundswell. There was that whole Beeple crap guy. That remember he sold an NFT for like $1 billion or something like that. I'd love to follow up on that guy. He seems to have cashed out and made a pretty penny. I mean, obviously, even if, you know, whatever tokens he was paid that in have lost their value, $1 billion, even if it has lost an insane amount of value, it's probably still some millions of dollars for old Beeple crap. But NFTs, the Bored Ape Yacht Club. You guys remember that? Celebrities were getting in on the fun. It's literally
Seth Green got.
Seth Green got, somebody took his apes. Somebody just took his apes. There was all this stuff where people were doing these like wallet, like phishing kind of scams, and you know, people would just totally get had, and there were the, you know, those people were stealing the credentials, or literally what these things are, of course, is it's a image that's backed by a receipt that is tied to the blockchain, that is a contract that you know says that thing belongs to you. It's about ownership. We've always kind of, I think, joked, or maybe it's not really a joke, it's true, a lot of this stuff is about fetishization of ownership.
Sure.
Because anybody could take a screenshot of the thing. I can look at anybody's monkey, a Bored Ape, which, by the way, these are like generative NFTs, so they're like created by an algorithm to look different, but they all kind of look the same. Like Ozzy Osbourne got in on it too. We had these like Ozzy bat things that were all just generated, and there'd be a limited number of them, like Pokemon or whatever it might be, trading cards, but it's all virtual.
One point though, before we get the email, the technology behind NFTs, the blockchain stuff, does have efficacy for things like real estate.
Yeah. Absolutely. We've talked about that all along the way as well. Not only that, marijuana has not been fully recreationally legal in New York City until very recently, but it was so decriminalized that there were literal brick and mortar weed dispensaries and shops. But much like the whole deal where, like in Atlanta, for the longest time, we had all these breweries that would not allow you to buy beer on site at the brewery. So they'd sell you a tour and they'd give you this little ticket, and then you'd exchange the ticket for your beer at the end, like a gift. Mm-hmm. And one way that some of these New York sort of dispensaries, these sort of skirting the law gray area dispensaries were doing it is they, and I did this one time, you pick out the things that you want. They quote unquote sell you an NFT that comes in your email, and then they give you the products that you've requested as a free gift.
Oh, so, okay.
It's another very clever use of this.
That reminds me of the weird gambling loopholes in Japan, for instance.
Totally.
There are these pachinko parlors, but gambling straight away is wish illegal. So you win prizes or points, and then you literally go across the street exchange that thing for any number of stuff. So. Yeah.
Not to get too off topic, but maybe you can shed some light on this, Ben. Here in Atlanta, gambling is not legal. There's no casinos in Atlanta, but some gas stations in certain parts of town have these poker machines, and you see people sitting on them, feeding them money. What's up with those?
Like, no comment, bro.
Just for funsies, or is there some payout, or is it just totally flouting the law, if that's even a word?
I mean, I don't want to derail us too often, but I do. From what I understand, Noel, there are not infrequent instances where there's a back room marked employees only, and that's where...
I've seen these in the main room. Like, there's one down the street from me. There's like three or four of them in the main room. People are always posted up at them.
That's the opening, dude. The opening, you play there, I guess you get your points or whatever. And then you go to the back room.
Okay. Well, I guess the back room of NFTs. Yeah, was, again, the point is NFTs famously tanked.
Sure.
Didn't go well. Magic Beans, Pixie Dust, Woozy Wazzy, whatever the character that Matthew McConaughey plays in Wolf of Wall Street is talking about for stocks. You know, he's like, nobody can predict any of this. It's all, you know, yes, that. And that was all apparently Ben's pounding on his chest. That was all apparently improvised. But I love when he just says, Tootski, and he offers him a little cocaine spoon, and then he instructs him on how to order martinis and keep them coming and all that. And he gives him this whole spiel about, you know, how it's all ephemeral, all this stock stuff. And we know that stocks are less ephemeral than this NFT or crypto stuff, but only like by only minor orders of magnitude, if that's not a total misnomer, what I just said. But the back room now has become these like kind of self-congratulatory parties where it's like, no, no, everything's still cool, y'all. We're good. We are the ones riding this out. We're weathering the storm, y'all. And this is a thing that's been happening since before the crash. I forget the exact number, but NFTs have lost just nearly all of their value. Like if you average it up together, I think the value of like NFTs overall is like practically zero. And I think like Justin Bieber spent multi-million dollars on one. It's now worth like $30,000. So it's like, you know, just the amount of loss practically equals it flatlining. But in Hong Kong, this one of these very exclusive, you know, NFT community parties, this has happened again, despite the climate. The Bored Ape Yacht Club throws this event. The organizer of it being Yuga Labs, the company based in the U.S. that originated the Bored Ape Yacht Club and that whole deal. And apparently, you know, this is the kind of thing you might think, like sort of a techno bro party type thing, like an activation, like at South by Southwest, but very specifically focused on these bored apes. So you'll see like animated apes DJing with lots of light shows and lasers and video projections and, you know, any number of hangers-on of the crypto and NFT world having booths and things like that, trying to get people riled up for the next wave, which unfortunately I don't think is going to happen. But it's called Ape Fest, which is funny in and of itself, because, you know, what does an ape do? The word ape, even, like aping someone else's behavior, that's kind of what all this is about. It's like not wanting to miss out. So I'm going to copy what this other rich guy's doing because I don't want to like lose out. I don't want to have FOMO. So it's like Ape Fest. And yeah, and this event took place at Kai Tak Cruise Terminal, and it was all hunky-dory. It was like maybe a couple hundred people, very high ticket price, probably upwards of $1,000, if not more than that. I'm not seeing the exact entry price right this second, but point being, party time, you know, animated monkeys dancing, all the good stuff, smoke machines, lasers, black lights, most importantly, neon. A lot of people the next day wake up with a different kind of hangover, you guys. Not just like, oh, no, I took too much Molly and drank too much Casa Dragones or whatever. No.
Is Molly ecstasy?
Molly is ecstasy, yes.
Huh. Okay.
MDMA, whatever. It's still a pretty popular dance party kind of club drug for the elite, you know? I see you shaking your head in bewilderment, Ben.
I don't know.
It's not my scene. I just know from what I've read. It's not never been my thing.
But that makes sense, you would say, because that drug in particular causes extreme dehydration.
Headache, dysphoria. They say the crash from that is often quite bad.
Oh, because it dumps your serotonin, right?
It does. It's more so than I think even like cocaine, because it gives you such an insane high, and it just gives you, you know, just shoots you, rushes you full of all this good feeling juice. And then the next day you're left feeling like a bit of a husk.
Okay, so people wake up with some sort of deleterious feeling that cannot be attributed to the substances they ingested.
They're just not quite sure what it is.
Okay.
And people take to the internet and start to kind of, you know, poll the community. Hey, anybody else wake up with your eyeballs feeling like they've been burnt out of your skull? Anybody else semi-blind, having blurred vision? You know, anybody else literally feel like I've got a sunburn on your corneas? Anybody?
Yikes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people confirmed, right?
100%. People are like, yeah, what's up with that? Turns out that some of those laser light dealies that I was talking about maybe were the wrong kind. You guys ever heard of a syndrome called welder's eye?
Yeah, photokeratitis.
That's the word, Ben. You nailed it. Matt, you ever seen like those, you know, welders, they wear those crazy hoods, those crazy, you know, whatever.
Well, it's a mask, like, right?
Masks. And- yeah, or there are versions of it that are just really sharp, tight, you know, goggles as well, right?
And it's got a lens on it that's a particular color that is exactly meant to stop certain frequencies of light from entering your eye over and over and over.
That's correct. If I'm not mistaken, it might be a little different with welding, but in this case, we're dealing with the product of ultraviolet light, aka radiation, that has a very deleterious effect on people who are exposed to it for too long, which is again why these you know, folks that work around it protect themselves. So it came out that somebody actually took to the internet and wrote a pretty extensive, you know, post saying, hey, this is real. Some friends of mine borderline have lost their vision. If you were at this event, you need to seek medical help before it's too late, because this is the kind of thing that if left unchecked could absolutely lead to long-term vision loss, potential blindness. So the symptoms, let's see. Yeah, here we go. This guy, yeah, Adam Zdunczyk, Zdunczyk. This is what he had to say. He was the guy I was just mentioning on X, nay, Twitter. To all my friends who suffer now, go get your eyes checked. You've likely most literally got your eyes burned with UV like I did, which requires medications, eye drops, eye protection, antibiotics, and specialist care. Don't ignore this health hazard. Without proper treatment, it may cause long-lasting vision impairment and other serious damage. So what happened exactly? Like, we all know that sometimes if you go to a certain concert or a certain film, there'll be a trigger warning about strobes that could potentially affect people with, say, epilepsy. That can be a very serious medical thing, but it doesn't burn out your eyeballs. And you know, typically lasers, while dangerous, if pointed directly at the eye, you know, into the eye, that could cause problems if it stuck there long enough. But that's not something that you hear people complaining about going to raves or these kind of parties. So something is amiss. So what happened? You know, this seems like something got switched. Was it nefarious? Was somebody like some, you know, V for Vendetta type character trying to target these revelers, you know, and make them pay? I mean, the irony is so thick you could cut it with a knife of some kind, a laser perhaps. We're talking about people who paid a bunch of money so they could get a picture of a monkey, an ape or whatever, and they, you know, so they could presumably look at it. Go to an event, you know, that's almost like partying on the deck of the Titanic as it sinks, but like a year later, kind of like, and then now they're potentially blind and can't look at anything anymore. It's too much. It's wild. So what ended up happening, we think, or is the theory, is that some of these light tubes, these bulbs, they accidentally, somehow, we don't know again how, were switched out. Like, there are these certain grades of light that would be like a black light that you'd see at like Spencer's to make a velvet poster of a dragon, you know, look like all shiny and stuff. And then there's something else, something called the Philips TUV 30 watt G30 T8 bulb, which is a light bulb that emits 12 watts of UVC radiation and is used for disinfection purposes. So this would be like one of those lights, right? Like you see in those hotel room exposés, maybe, where they shine the thing. And that's, you know, and you notice when they do that, people usually put on glasses, don't they? If they're doing it for a while, they usually pass out some little glasses. And I guess, presumably, there were tons of these. And people also had burns on their skin. Not only on their eyes.
Isn't this used to, like, it's a light-based germicide.
That's it too. Maybe I'm getting it wrong. You know what? We did talk about, remember during COVID, people were saying UV light could potentially kill COVID, but it was also mixed up with a bunch of other BS claims. But yes, absolutely. I'm sure this could potentially be a disinfectant. But you would again, if it's emitting that much actual radiation, you would protect yourself. And if enough of these were installed, mm-hmm. that could be really, really bad news.
Could it be a translation error or some sort of like, I'm with you, Noel, on the idea that this was not a malevolent action, right? But could it be a matter of someone just getting the wrong item in an invoice or working in English versus working in Chinese characters and ideograms? Like
it's certainly possible that I haven't seen that exact speculation. One thing I did see, though, and I will wrap it up with this, was just a comment from the organizers, essentially not claiming any responsibility. This is the kind of thing that, you know, they would never claim responsibility. They would pass the buck to some supplier, some mistranslation, like you said, Ben, and all this to say that they're looking into it, you know, and that they're going to do everything they can to make people whole, whatever. But holy cow, what a tale.
I've been watching a video on loop over here on X for quite a while, posted by Crypto Turk. And it's an actual video of the fest. And I'm trying to discern which lights are actually the ones we've been talking about. And guys, there's like just kind of a blue light hue going on, like that's shown over everybody that you can't really tell the source of. And then they've got these crazy violet lights that are just kind of flying around, you know, like shining down on everybody.
Yeah.
I feel like if you were laser blasting folks with that, if that was the one we're talking about, it would not be good if you just a couple times in the night glanced up and saw that thing like right in your eyes.
It's interesting stuff. somebody would pay. Or at the very least, you know, someone will get their finger pointed at them, potentially a bony monkey finger cartoon. And Ben, I think you found another story of something kind of similar to this, a similar whoopsie mix up happening at some kind of sneakerhead conference.
Yeah. Apparently, Hypebeast back in 2017, they had a pop-up at a place called The Landmark that had similar symptoms, and it looks like it was the same light. So maybe it's just easy for people to confuse the two when they're working on a big venue at scale.
Well, they need to get that looked into, Tootsuite, because yeah, this is not a good look for anybody. And again, I'm interested to see who takes the fall for this. But let's take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then come back with some more strange news.
And we've returned. Hey, guys, do you like tires?
I love that they exist and I hate paying for them. Matt, I just had to buy some tires before I left town for a while just to keep a car in running condition. And I cheaped out, which I don't usually do on a car, but I cheaped out. I didn't get all four tires. I just got the front two. You have to at least buy them in a pair, right?
Well, yeah. What are you going to do about your what do they call that? Rotation, man, and all your alignment and whatever.
I'll do that on my own. I know how to do that.
But those are all real things that you got to worry about.
Yeah.
And tires are made out of rubber and a bunch of other compounds that assist in rubber continuing to be rubber. And that's what this story is going to be about. This is actually something we've brought up before in the past when we talked about vehicles, we talked about infrastructure, and we talked about pollution. I think we actually mentioned this specific chemical before, but today it's back in the news and it is worth our time. All right, here we go. We're going to read from several different sources here, but a little verbatim, I apologize, but let's go ahead and do some shout outs. First shout out is to Rocky Mountain Outlook. They've got an article here written by Mark Thiessen 3 days ago as we record this. So Wednesday, November 5th. Remember.
Hey, I made a V for Vendetta reference earlier, too.
Sorry.
No,
it's great. We're on it.
It's
we're
a party.
It. Yeah.
It's just the way he says, remember the 5th of November.
Oh, yeah. What is that? Hugo Weaving?
Same guy from The Matrix.
Right.
Yeah, dude.
Mr. Anderson.
Yeah.
I didn't do that one very well, but please carry on.
So here's the title. U.S. regulators, that should be the EPA, will review car tire chemical that kills salmon upon request from West Coast tribes. And by West Coast tribes, it means indigenous tribes in the United States or living within the United States, territories that exist on U.S. soil. Okay, what? First of all, there's a chemical in tires that kills salmon? That doesn't sound good. Let's dig in. Okay, so there is, in fact, a chemical, one chemical that's used in tires. And again, there are a lot of chemicals, but one of them that is used to prevent that rubber from breaking down as quickly as it normally would. This is a weird chemical, and let's just get it out of the way. It's known as 6-PPD, 6-PPD. So if you ever want to refer to it as a thing, just call it 6-PPD. But here's the full thing. Ready?
Yeah.
N-1,3-dimethylbutyl N-phenyl-P phenylenediamine.
You just broke my brain, dude. No.
Let's take a moment and admire that pronunciation.
That was very well done, sir.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you.
I spent way too long on that. But so what this chemical does, it's hanging out there with the rubber in the tire that you're rolling around on, all four of them, hopefully. And it reacts with oxygen and ozone. So two different forms of the oxygen molecules, and it oxidizes or ozonidizes. There's a term for it, but that chemical itself is the thing that reacts with the oxygen in the atmosphere around the tire, rather than that oxygen and ozone reacting with the rubber itself. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because if the rubber interacted with the oxygen, it would break down and flake away the way you've seen rubber break down, maybe in an old pencil or something. Or you've probably just seen old rubber objects that have just busted up completely like a ball.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's just a natural process of what occurs with rubber. These chemicals, these additives, are meant to stop that from happening as quickly as it would. And when that chemical, 6-PPD, reacts with ozone specifically and oxygen, it creates a separate chemical. What do you call it? It's a product of that chemical plus ozone. They call this 6-PPD-Q, or quinone, 6-PPD-quinone. This is the thing, this like after effect, right, of 6-PPD interacting with ozone. That's the thing that's dangerous, because if you imagine the four tires on a car rolling down a highway over and over and over and over again in one specific part of highway, now imagine that it rains, and on top of that highway where all of those tires have gone over, this chemical has been leaching off onto the ground, right, for every tire that goes across it. When it rains, the water interacts with those chemicals and runs all of those chemicals off wherever that water is going to flow. Generally, it's going to flow into a creek or something like that. When it gets in there, it continues flowing down to wherever that water goes into. And if salmon and a couple other types of fish happen to live in that water, this chemical is lethal to them. So not great. Here's the big problem, y'all. This chemical has been in tires since the 1950s. Human beings have known that this is a byproduct of the chemicals we've been using in tires since the 1950s for about that long.
Well, remember when we did that episode on the Michelin Man and the Michelin tires on Ridiculous History? And like, there was a whole history of like crazy, gnarly chemicals in tires that was like essentially almost like a cover up, right?
Yeah, if you want to see some conversational parkour or hear some, you can also tune into several car stuff episodes on tires. Yeah. You're right, Matt. It's been kind of nasty for a while, but it was easy to ignore, I think, for many people. And to your point about the interstates, modern pavement too, the problem is arguably exacerbated because the chemical composition of the pavement is such that it absorbs water or transfers water differently than plain old dirt.
Oh, yeah. If you want to get those same lessons, Ben, head on over to the website for the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association, because in there they've addressed these issues and the fact, we didn't even say it yet, We'll jump back in just a moment. But they've addressed these issues and, you know, provided all this information about previous studies, about this particular chemical, about potential fixes, which would both get rid of that chemical or reduce that chemical and maintain the safety standards in tires for vehicles on roads in the United States. Because that is the main argument for keeping this 6 PPD around. It is the most reliable chemical to prevent tire breakdown that exists and that is known of right now. And if you've ever seen a tire explode on the highway, whether from, you know, an 18-wheeler or just a regular car, you know how dangerous that can be, how it can potentially kill the driver and another driver or a bunch of drivers, cause a major accident, or the debris from a tire can cause a major accident itself. Like, that's scary stuff. Really, really scary stuff. So I understand the tire manufacturers saying, hey, this has been working. We need a solution, but we got to remember that this is working. But they list a bunch of stuff like, hey, one potential thing we could do is rubber treat all the asphalt on the highways. So the asphalt itself is rubber treated. You're like, well, guys, I don't know if that does the right thing. But again, there was a study in 2006 that the Arizona Department of Transportation conducted, and they found, hey, you can reduce tire wear by 50% if you rubber treated the road too. Anyway,
doesn't that seem like a just to interject, Matt, does that not seem like a bad faith argument? They're saying, well, we could do things. Here's our solution. Put the rubber on the entirety of the United States roads.
That's where the rubber meets the road, guys.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, I mean, there are other ideas like, well, why don't we just use chopped up tires to make these things on the sides of highways to trap some of the chemicals? And again, I get it. It's the Tire Manufacturers Association saying, hey, how do we benefit from this thing? right. I get it. I understand.
Like when they wanted to make coral reefs out of old tires.
Yeah.
Spoiler, didn't work out.
It could have. Who knows? That's the thing. Got to give things a try. But if there's motivations behind it that are pretty clear, we should probably just be open about those motivations. The whole reason this is even happening, that the Environmental Protection Agency has even taken a look at this chemical, is because those tribes got together and they made a huge petition saying, hey, this specific type of salmon is really important culturally to us, and this chemical is wiping out the populations along the Puget Sound, along all these other areas in the Northwest. Let's call out these tribes. It's the Yurok tribe in California, the Port Gamble, Sklallam, and the Puyallup tribes in Washington. They all got together and they asked the EPA, hey, help us out. It's specifically coho salmon, C-O-H-O salmon.
Isn't that the kind that's sort of like the real pink kind that you get like at the regular, just the store?
I honestly don't know a ton about this specific type.
I've heard of it, but I'm trying to remember if it's like basic, kind of like, you know, the lowest tier salmon, or if it's a nicer one, but that doesn't matter. I know I've heard the name before. Yeah, no, coho versus sockeye versus king. So like sockeye and king are the fancy ones. Coho is still kind of fancy. It's like definitely up there, but it's a little less fancy than the sockeye or the king.
Because it's not farm raised.
I think that's right.
You get the wild caught, so you get the extra edible parasites. That's true.
100%.
Also,
no fish is pink like that. It's just not a thing.
It's
that
like butter being yellow, you know. But also, they're already, I believe, coho or wild-caught salmon is already in a bit of a pickle because a bunch of farm-raised salmon escaped recently. Anyway.
Yeah. They're also in trouble because there are a bunch of dams that have been built on, you know, salmon travel very specific routes to get back to their spawning areas. And, you know, if you build a dam over the route, it's probably not going to be good.
Fish ladders or no? Is that a thing that salmon will cooperate with? I'm not sure. It just came up recently, the idea of fish ladders. I was talking to my kid about the Hoover Dam. She's like, what are those things? The fish go up? I'm like, fish ladder. That's what that's
called. Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming because I don't know how else you get over a dam, right? That's once right. Something artificial like that's been put in place. This is all to say it is worth our time, at least to probably, as humans, think about tire alternatives. There have been many over the years, potential tire alternatives that either use the same rubber materials but in a very different way, or use a different lattice structure. Things that we've, again, we talked about this on the show so many times. It is worth our time as humans to really invest in this at some point. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we can convince one of those billionaires that's trying to get to the stars to, like, I don't know, focus down here for a little bit, we could make something happen.
Make ecological hygiene sexy again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, okay. We're going to have to workshop that because it doesn't I don't think it quite lands linguistically for a chant, but but something like that, Matt. And you gave us these fantastic articles too, and these sources. I was unaware of this specific issue. I think we support the indigenous peoples that are fighting for ecological justice here. There was a point in the Rocky Mountain Outlook article that you shared where one of the boffins says we're focused on this one chemical, but it's bigger than that.
Oh yeah.
Could you talk about that just a little bit?
Well, it's just the fact that there are a lot of additives to the rubber and metal and stuff, all the things that create what a modern tire is. And a lot of those chemicals, again, they all break down, right? Because the rubber, if you've ever been to get a checkup on your tires, they check the depth of your tire. And that is because it's physically wearing down as that rubber hits the road. And it doesn't just go away or, you know, dissipate into the atmosphere when that rubber goes away. It goes onto the streets and it gets run off. And because, again, a tire is a complicated, kind of cool thing, an invention that humanity has created.
And it lasts a lot, you know, relatively long time. I mean, I would say it's not like planned obsolescence. Like, no one has invented forever tires yet, right?
Correct. And you can rebuild those tires. There's a whole industry of basically replacing the outer layer of a tire to continue its functionality.
Retreading.
That's right.
And it's there are a lot of chemicals in there to make it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them aren't great for wildlife.
I mean, that beautiful new car smell is also not great for the people smelling it. It all, like in that case, it's VOCs, right? Volatile organic chemicals. But this is perfect strange news because this is something I would argue that doesn't get the national mainstream attention that it really needs.
Yeah. Oh man, one of the, I guess, worst things about that article. Oh no, it was from the Puget Sound Institute, and it was an article written in 2021, and it was covering the tire-related chemicals and how coho salmon are being affected, how the populations are being affected, and how they had just, basically these groups had just worked their butts off to get the coho salmon population back up, and they seem to be thriving. And then all of a sudden they're like, wait, what the heck's happening now? And it turns out it was this tire runoff somehow that was affecting specific areas of where they travel when they go to reproduce. Check out PugetSoundInstitute.org and the article titled "Discovery of Tire-Related Chemical That Kills Coho Salmon Sparks Widespread Response" from August 2021. Oh, and one last thing to check out. Department of Ecology, State of Washington. They've got a great article on here. It's super short, but it explains pretty succinctly like what the problem is, and it uses a couple infographics that are very helpful.
And with that, folks, we cannot wait to hear from you. Thank you, as always, for tuning in this evening. Several of us are riding the highway right now on some of those car tires. Tell us what you think about the larger issue here. Tell us what you think about NFTs and lasers non-consensually in your eyes. And of course, enjoy your chicken nuggets.
Wait, can we hear about some heists on the listener mail episode to follow this one?
Oh, did we mention the heist on air?
We did. We teased it, but we're out of time and we don't want to give it short shrift. So let's, we had a little bit of a preamble-y beginning to this episode, but these are fun. And to Matt's point off mic, they're very evergreen.
we will see. Yes, agreed. And great catch, Noel. Salmon jokes. So we are going to return very soon. We want to thank everybody. We had a run of classic episodes. Several of us were on the road recently. We're back in the saddle or back on our fish ladder, as they say. And we continue.
I had the flu. Just full disclosure.
I too was unwell.
We're continually migrating to 2024.
I was on the road to Wellville.
There we go. Oh, guys, did you see this weird, like, bowling jacket looking
Holy
thing?
Holy cow. Yeah. Where'd you get nice. That? On the road?
Did
on the
you road. Join yeah. an organization?
Not a flashy one.
Starting with a Y and with a Z somewhere in there.
Right. Speaking of joining organizations, we would love for you to gather with us in the campfire around the figurative darkness. We try to be easy to find online.
Correcto mundi, mundo, whatever. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on X, nay, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, where we have a group called Here's Where It Gets Crazy that you can join if that's your thing. Also, you can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Hey, why not swim up the old phone lines and spawn a voicemail? Call us. We are 1-833-STDWYTK. You've got 3 minutes when you call in. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. Hey, if you don't want to do that, but you still want to contact us, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.